Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf. I'm your host, Ted Oderico, and joining me, of course, is one of the hardest working women in the LPGA professional circuit, and it's Cindy Miller. Cindy, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Ted. It's great to be here.
And we're going to talk a little bit here in just a few minutes about your weekend that just passed, and we'll get to that in just a second up at the Legends Championship. But first, let me just remind everybody that we're here every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com. And a simple way to get there is either you can just type in your URL, blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf, or you can just go to the blogtalkradio.com website and just type in up in the search key, Women of Golf, and that'll get you there as well. Don't forget, during the live broadcast, which is from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern time on Tuesday mornings, you can certainly call into the program at 347-945-5855, or you can email the show if you have any comments or questions about the program. You can do so at womenofgolf@gmail.com. Or if you're interested in coming on the program, if you're in the golf business, particularly the LPGA, if you want to write into us and say, hey, I'd like to be on the show and have some thoughts and input that you'd like to share with the audience, you can do that as well at thewomenofgolf@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also always get a hold of Cindy at her email at cindy@cindymillergolf.com. And make sure you check out her website as well at cindymillergolf.com. As I said, we got we've got a great guest coming up a little bit later in the show, but we're going to talk first here about the highlights from the Legends Championship at French Lick, Indiana, at the resort there. And a little later on, we're going to be joined by LPGA professional Sandra Haney, and she's going to be joining us for some discussion a little bit later on. But let me just very quickly, Cindy, before we start, I just want to apologize to the listeners last week. Right near the end of the program, for the last 4 or 5 minutes of the show, ran into a little technical difficulty and had to end it abruptly. So I'd like to apologize for that and keeping my fingers crossed that everything will run smoothly today. So just wanted to say a quick apology to the listeners out there if you were tuning in. Cindy, you had a couple things going on last week. Tell us a little bit about the resort very quickly, and then tell us about some of your experience that you had at the championship this year.
Well, French Lick Resort, the hotel, the West Baden Hotel, is over 100 years old, and it's a huge atrium building, like a dome, a hard shell dome that is absolutely amazing. And there's 200 rooms in this hotel, and it is where Al Capone used to come down from Chicago and hide out. This place is amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. There's some springs and, you know, and all this good stuff, but it's absolutely beautiful. Cobblestone streets and a horse and a carriage and all this stuff. It's just gorgeous. And there's Donald Rose.
That was his home before he ended up in Alcatraz, is that right?
Yeah. He would hang out. Anyway, there are two golf courses, the Donald Ross course, which has been around for a long, long time. They used to play the LPGA Championship there. And Louise Suggs and Betsy Rawls and Patty Berg and Mickey Wright used to be there and play in this tournament. In fact, the LPGA National Teaching Championship was held there 3 or 4 years ago. And then it's owned a company by the name of Cook Medical. And Mr. Cook invented the heart stent from Indianapolis. And he purchased the West Baden Hotel, 10, 12 years ago. And it was falling down. It was caving in. And there were deer living in there. It was absolutely a mess. It had been closed since 1930-something. And this Mr. Cook was very interested in refurbishing old buildings. Well, he purchased this hotel, and you cannot believe what they have done to it. It is absolutely gorgeous. And then he bought the French Lip Hotel, which has got 400 rooms. So there's 600 rooms in the middle of Indiana that you've never
wow.
heard of, other than the fact that Larry Bird is from there. And then they built the Pete Dye course. And when Pete Dye first came there, he told Mr. Cook, I can't build a golf course on this property. You don't have enough money. And he said, oh, watch me. And so Mr. Dye said, fine, I'll see what I can do here. And he did. And holy cow, is this a golf course? It's on the side of a mountain. I mean, you go around, even the cart paths are scary because you think you're on two wheels.
Yeah.
It's just uphill, downhill, side hill, wide, but it's absolutely beautiful. It's in magnificent shape. They have a huge pavilion, and the 2015 Senior PGA Championship is going to be there. And I cannot wait to hear what these guys have to say about this golf course and see the scores they shoot. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I was on. Yeah, last week when we were talking, I had the website up, and I was looking at some of the photos, and just absolutely breathtaking, just amazing scenery, and you're not kidding about some of the undulations, not only on the greens, but on the fairways and that as well. It's just up, down, and certainly I'm sure it was a test of golf for the ladies last week. So, first question, Cindy, did you own your game last weekend?
You know, I didn't on the first day. I wasn't, again, the question that all my students need to ask is why. And that's
right.
The question I ask most to myself. You know, why do you miss shots? Is it fear? Is it doubt? Is it your swing? Is it your mm-hmm. tempo? Is it the fact that you're not lined up right? And so no one asked that question more than me. I only hit like 7 greens the first day. I made a triple. I've got 2 par threes on this golf course that own me. And one is number 8, of which I made a triple. And one is number 16. And the second day, I made a quad. I was one
wow.
on the par going. And again, it's like, can I just come back here and hit a half a bucket of balls? I just need to get comfortable on this tee box. And I said to Alan, the tournament, unfortunately, was rained out the last day. And I improved my score by 4 shots. And in the front 9 of the first round of the tournament, I shot 44, and then I shot 38. So I was able to come back. The point is that why is there a hole that your subconscious mind absolutely just messes with you? So we're going to ask our guest coming up here in a few minutes. And I know it's fear, but I didn't know how to conquer it on those 2 holes. And what I said a minute ago, I asked Alan, I said, you know, maybe I should just hit a 9-iron off this tee box and make a bogey. Because the second round, I thought, oh, I'm going to be fine. And both of these holes, I hit 30 yards left of where I was aiming. And it was like
wow.
a demon position. My backswing. And then I couldn't get out of where I was. I was on the side hill, downhill, and heather. Could barely hit the ball. I mean, I almost whipped it. I chopped it out 3 times, made a 7. You know, and it's just very deflating because you think, holy cow, I worked so hard, and then this happened. And again, you know, like I said, I've never met anyone who tried to miss it on purpose, and clearly I wasn't either. But you know, the first day I only hit 7 greens. Second day I hit 13. So I really hit it better. But there's those 2 holes that just yuck. So it's the endless, never-ending pursuit for me.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing is, too, when you have adverse conditions like that, you know, you've got a difficult course, and then you get a couple of holes like that that sort of – even at the highest level of the game, there's certain courses and even certain holes that sort of weigh on your mind that, you know, when you come up to them, it's like, uh-oh, you know, like, it, you know, you almost kind of visualize, you know, disaster in a way, because they've just sort of stymied you, if you will, so many times before. And so you kind of almost set yourself up, I think, you know, as a golfer, when you're faced with that situation, sometimes with a negative. You try not to, but it's very, very easy to happen to, I think, to just about any golfer. Would you agree with that?
I think it is. I don't think you do it on purpose. And
no.
That's the puzzling part. So, you know, I am not walking up to it afraid. I'm walking up to it. I'm going to conquer you this time. And it still doesn't work. So I know deep down that this is a subconscious level that has to
be
addressed. And I can tell you that I defeated an awful lot of demons. I played with Jenny Lidback the second round. She said, wow, you hit it amazing today. And I really did. I mean, I had some shots that I was like, whoa, that was awesome. On the other hand, I had some shots that were terrible. Again, that's just, why do we play golf? Is it for the challenge? For me, it's the personal challenge to see if I can hit a shot when I need to. And so I'm glad that I didn't get the chance to defeat number 8 and number 16 on Sunday, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to play and challenge myself. I mean, I hit some awesome shots under, you know, scary, scary conditions. And it's funny, it was hard for a lot of people, but on the other hand, the second round of the tournament, Sherry Steinhauer shot 63, 9 under par.
Wow.
Joan Pidcock wrote on Facebook, how, all capitals with, you know, question marks, how on God's green earth did you do that? And so they posted an interview with Sherry on how she did do that. She actually started the first hole with a bogey. Again, she made an awful lot of putts. She didn't reach any of the par fives in two, which I thought, don't tell me she reached these par fives because I'm really going to be depressed, which she didn't, but... But she made a lot of putts and she hit it great. And so 10 birdies and a bogey. So it's not that it can't be done. It can be done. And Lori Rinker shot 71-66, and she won the tournament by one over Sherry, in which she did give kudos to her caddy, which was a local young man who she had last year because she was an inspector. So clearly the local knowledge helped her. She did say to him, oh, thank you so much for helping me, because you really have to hit it in certain spots. And again, Alan and I did that. We went out there and said, where's the safe zone? Where do we want to hit this ball? So I can tell you that the difference between the first day and the second day, I had the opportunity, I'm going to shift states here for a second. The tournament charity was the Riley Kids Foundation, and the Riley Kids Foundation is part of the Children's Miracle Network, and they help children in the whole state of Indiana that have, you know, small diseases and big-time diseases, and their poster child happens to be a young girl by the name of Ashton Brown, and Ashton was at the tournament, it's a very small world. 2 years ago, our daughter Kelly, who's a feature producer at the Golf Channel, had an opportunity to do a feature on Ashton Brown. And Ashton got leukemia when she was 6 years old, and they kind of defeated it. And it came back with a vengeance when she was 9. And there was really nothing that she could do or they could do to help her. And the only option was an experimental drug that was $100,000 a day to administer to her. And that is the only way it's her life. Well, Ashton, Kelly did this feature on Ashton, which, of course, you know, nobody is going to have a dry eye watching the feature. And it happened to be nominated for an Emmy Award, which she didn't win, but it was fun because our daughter Kelly, then helped Ashton get an internship at the Golf Channel. And helped her find an apartment, and they became really good friends. Well, just so happens when we pulled up into the tournament, one of the cart guys came up and said, Mrs. Miller, would you be willing to play a practice round with Ashton Brown? And I said, are you kidding me? I had no idea she was going to be there. And I said, you tell her Kelly Miller's mother's here because they're pretty good friends now. Well, it just so happens that Ashton is playing college golf at the University of Indianapolis. And she's she had to move into her dorm room yesterday, and she was working on her game during the week at the tournament. And so after the first round, she was on the range with none other than Kathy Whitworth. So I'm not stupid. And I walked over and I was listening to what Kathy was telling her. And so I was telling Kathy about my dilemma on these two holes and how I was just trying to solve my puzzle. And she came up with this stupid little thing of, Cindy, you're letting go with your right hand and you're not paying attention to where you're aiming. Keep your right hand on the club and start with the face going to the target. Don't do anything else until you set up square to where that face is, and don't take your right hand off that club. Well, I'll be darned. That's what I did the second round, and that's when I hit 13 greens. So I'm grateful that Ashton was there. I'm grateful they raised $100,000 for the Riley Kids Foundation. And it was just a great week, There's amazing people at this French Lick Resort. The head pro, the general manager, Mr. Ferguson, who runs Cook Medical. It was just a marvelous week.
Well, and, you know, and that's the thing. That's one thing that, you know, I certainly love about the game of golf is not only, obviously, the personal challenges, as you had indicated earlier, but there's just so many great people involved in the game, and there's just, you know, so many ways to help other people, and obviously the you know, the Riley Foundation was this particular choice for this tournament, and you know, what a story, you know, to of a young lady's journey, if you will, of really survival, and it's great that she you know, has such an optimistic view and outlook of life. I mean, a lot of people faced with that difficulty and challenge would. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that would give up, and she obviously, you know, has the inner strength to move on. And what a great story of, you know, of a young lady just pushing forward with her life and coming out and enjoying a great weekend with some top professionals like yourself and many of the others. Let me ask you very quickly, if I can. Now, I want to go back a little bit. Only because you guys mentioned it last weekend, that now you and Barb teamed up. Barb Moxness, of course, was our guest last weekend, you guys teamed up. I guess it was just, it wasn't actually, was it part of the tournament or was it just sort of like a practice round?
No, it was just a practice round redemption match. That's all.
But you had a battle going on. Why don't you tell us just very quickly about that if you can?
Well, we kicked our butts. we made 15 bucks apiece. We beat them all ways on a $5 Nassau, which was kind of fun. And Barb birdied the last hole to put the clinch on it. And in fact, she birdied 16 and 18. And they weren't very happy. But we teamed up pretty good, and we did kick their butts, and we made 15 bucks apiece, which was really nice.
Very good. Well, see, last weekend, or last week on the show, you guys said that you were going to rise to the challenge, and you weren't going to repeat last year and be defeated. And you went out and you actually won the matches, so that was good. You know, the one thing about you know, competing at this level, Cindy, is there's a lot of outside pressures. Obviously, you have you know, people watching the tournament, and you're playing amongst you know, other highly talented and qualified professionals. How do you sort of keep and balance that in check? And that's, you know, part of what you talked about, keeping your focus and things like that. How do you, I mean, obviously you're up there with them, but what do you do to sort of, you know, smell the roses, if you will, and focus on your own game and not worried, you know, about everybody else's game? How do you sort of keep yourself focused on what Cindy Miller's doing?
Well, it's the only way you can play golf is to focus on what you're doing. I must tell you that in reality, and I have to do this every time I play in a Legends Tour event, I need to realize that sometimes my expectations might be a little higher than they should be. I have to, and the funny thing is I got in there, played a little bit on Monday afternoon, played an 18-hole practice round on Tuesday, and Wednesday I taught at the LPGA Golf Clinic for Women. I had 8 women all day long that I helped move their game. So Jane Blaylock company runs the LPGA Golf Clinics for Women. So Old National Bank mm-hmm. Sponsored an event for 72 women. So I was a teacher all day on Wednesday with 8 women, which they were marvelous women. We had a great time, and they really, really improved, and it was lots of fun. So it's a matter of learning how to shift states. You know, and then Thursday was the Pro-Am, which I played with 4 great amateurs from Ice Miller, which is a lawyer and an attorney partnership that serves the whole state of Indiana and Ohio, and some people from French Lick. And so it was just, you know, shifting states from entertainer to educator to performer and player. And it is pretty difficult, and especially when you haven't played in a tournament. You know, last tournament I played in was in May. And between May and now, I've probably given 500 golf lessons, maybe more.
Right.
So, again, you got to go, okay, take a chill pill here, girl. Who do you really think you are? And I think, and that's one of my questions to Sandra when she gets on the line, is how do you shift states? And Jane Blaylock and I about it during the rain delay, and she said, when I have a business meeting, I can't go play golf right after. I just cannot do it anymore and expect to perform well. So I believe, you know, my first 9 holes were atrocious, but after that I kind of settled down, and I think it just takes me longer to shift states, you know, and the expectation level and all people at home watching your scores, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm making a jerk of myself. But you know, it's not that you're trying to. You're trying the best you can, perform the best you can. So I think it's a matter of, you know, Cindy, can you really expect to do all these different things and play up to your ability? And the answer is, you know what, I'm not Superwoman. I'm close, but I'm not quite super.
Two things that I wanted to – one is really kind of a comment, but I'm going to roll into somewhat of a question, and then I wanted to ask you about something that you had just said and kind of brought another question to mind. Do you think really the balancing act is really to get your conscious and your subconscious mind sort of working in unison? Because a lot of times, you know, your conscious mind, you're looking at the difficulty, you're looking at the trouble, and you're saying to yourself, your little mantra, you know, I'm going to be able to – you know, overcome these things, I'm going to focus on my target, but your subconscious is thinking something entirely different. So really, the trick is to get both of them sort of on the same page. Is that about right?
Well, here's what I think is in my case is the issue. I didn't play on tour for 15 or 20 years. I only played for 3. So
right.
I believe I have really learned. Again, you know, I've learned, but have I practiced it for 15 or 20 years? The answer is no, because I was with a person who played on tour for 15 years. And I can tell you that this guy can hit a golf cart and hit a shot like he's played, you know, 100 rounds in a year, which he hasn't played any. So I believe that the people that played on the tour, which is who I'm competing against, and Sandra's going to be one that comes on the phone, already have their game. They have their game plan. They already own their game. You follow?
Right. Yep.
Believe I am still seeking and searching on my setup because I have issues with lining up. So
right.
I know in part that when I stand over, and that's what Kathy helped me with, just stop and make sure your attention is on your intention. I am going to hit the ball here. And I, because I tend to be a high D personality, if you will, from our personality assessment last week, I do everything fast. So that could be a strength and that could be a weakness. And my weakness is I don't pay attention to what I'm intending to do. So I need to stop and pay attention, which I did on my second round of golf, and wow, were the results amazing. So I'm really looking forward to playing next week. I have another tournament, the LPGA National Teaching Championship is at Chateau Resort, and I'm looking forward to challenging myself next week. I believe that most of these people that I'm competing against, I know that they played on tour a lot longer than me, many of them Hall of Fame members. They aren't looking
right.
for their game when they get there. They have owned their game for a long time.
Right.
I think it's the difference.
Right. Let me ask you one other thing while we wait for Sandra. You had mentioned a few moments ago, you know, in between playing the practice rounds and the actual tournament, you know, giving some lessons in that. Obviously, you've given a lot of lessons, and you certainly know what you're doing. Is there ever, and I'm going to sort of quote an Oprah moment here, if you will, is there at any point when you're teaching some of your students where you kind of yourself have an aha moment where you kind of think, ah, yeah, you know what, that's what I need to – do you understand what I'm saying? Is there ever a moment during the lesson that maybe, you know, we all forget things from time to time because there's a lot to remember. Do you ever sort of take a step back in your mind and sort of think, aha, yeah, I've got to remember to do that when I'm out warming up next time or when I get out on the golf course? Do you ever have any aha moments like that during your teaching sessions?
Every day, you know, every day. I tell my students, you know, I don't act like I'm better than you because we're all in this together. And I use mm-hmm. myself as a living laboratory. I mean, every time I come
right.
back from a tournament, share, you know, I'm very transparent because I believe the people need to know this is hard no matter how good you are.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm no
mm-hmm.
better than anyone else. And so I believe that, I learn things all the time. And I'm always seeking, you know, and that's why I cherish these women that we're playing with, you know, the Sandra Haneys, the Jane Blaylocks, the Kathy Whitworth. A lot of these kids have no idea who these people are, and they have no
yep.
idea the wealth of knowledge and wisdom that we can gain from all their years. I took a picture. The French Lick Resort has the Legends Tour Hall of Fame inside their hotel. So I went to the display, and on the wall is a picture engraved with every one of Kathy Whitworth's 88 wins. She's won
wow.
more tour events than any man or woman alive, and that's never oh. publicized. So I took a picture of that plaque, and I posted it on Facebook, and I said, you know, I need to tell you that no one's ever won more than this woman. She is a total class act, and I'm proud to call her my friend. She wrote or to my new book, you know. So I mean, she's just amazing, and I don't think people are aware of the knowledge and wisdom.
Right, and I think, you know, in today's society, that's so true. I think what happens is it's you know, there's a mindset of, you know, what have you done lately, and I think there's a lot of great legends in the game like Kathy Whitworth. And certainly others out there that really need to be moved to the forefront, because it's so true. You learn, you know, as each generation comes forward, we pass our knowledge on to the next generation. And unfortunately, today's generation is learning it from electronic gadgets. And it's not to say that some of the information isn't accurate and good, but there's a lot of other misinformation that people get. And, you know, there is no better way to accumulate knowledge than from somebody that has that experience and passing it down. So yeah, by all means, I think it's great that you're doing that to get Kathy, you know, in the forefront again. I see that we've got Sandra waiting here. So let me just quickly mention a few notes, then we'll bring her on and join in the conversation. Sandra Haney, of course, is currently she's the director of instruction at the Windstar Golf Academy, which is at the Windstar Casino in Oklahoma. She's originally from Fort Worth, Texas, where she was born, but she's living now in Bedford, Texas. Her rookie year in LPGA was in 1961, and she's been an LPGA professional for 28 years, 42 wins, 4 majors, and she's had 3 hole-in-ones, a pretty impressive backdrop. She's also began playing at the age of 11 and credits A.G. Mitchell and Gail Davis for helping her with her game. And in 1984, she was inducted into the Texas Golf Hall of Fame and was named among Golf Magazine's top 100 heroes during the 1988 Centennial of Golf in America celebration. And she was also inducted into the Women's Sports Foundation International Hall of Fame in 1999. Also recognized during the LPGA's 50th anniversary in 2000 as one of the LPGA's top 50 players and teachers. So we're going to bring Sandra Haney on the program and talk a little golf. Sandra, welcome to the Women of Golf.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're so glad you're joining us.
How are you?
We're doing good.
Good. Excellent.
So you got back to Texas and everything's fine?
I did. You know, the typical 2-hour delay in the flight, but all is well, and it's nice to be back home. Enjoyed my time away, though.
That's good. It is good to get away, isn't it?
It really is, especially when you get the opportunity to see all your friends. I won't say old friends, but my friends. And so I think a really good time was had by all in French Lick.
I
let me
just go too.
Yeah, Cindy, before you start, let me just ask very quickly of Sandra. We kind of got earlier in the program a little bit of take from Cindy's take on the resort at French Lick. How did you find the course? What were your impressions of the course?
Well, I since I don't play a lot of competitive golf anymore, I found the golf course very difficult. It is absolutely beautiful. The golf course was in just impeccable shape. We couldn't have asked for a better golf course. It's just tough. It's very much a target golf course, and you know, if you stray from point A to point B, you're going to have a little bit of a problem. But you know,
that's very diplomatic.
There's some places you think you're hitting it, and it doesn't end up there. And I unfortunately had quite a few of those. And as I said, I went up there to I've just now kind of started back playing and practicing a little bit, and I just wanted to see where I kind of stood with my game a little bit. Not that, you know, I'm not going on tour or anything, but just to get back to where I can enjoy the game, because I think I kind of lost that a little bit over the last few years, and it's been fun to kind of go back out and start practicing a little bit.
Well we're
it's
glad
good,
you did.
Yeah, it's nice to be playing in a little bit of competitive golf again, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's the part. I don't miss the working on my game. I don't miss all the travel. But I do miss the competitive feeling, that adrenaline rush that you get from being in contention on a day-to-day, kind of being out there, being on the ground, being in the mix. And I do miss that. I would suggest that probably any one professional in any given area, any sport, misses that at some level. But, you know, Things change and move on, and they're different. And one of the, I think the hardest things for me, kind of coming back a little bit, is just acceptance of where my golf game is today, as opposed to what I know it was.
Right.
And it's not there anymore. So acceptance is playing just a huge role in my life right now. To say, okay, well, this is what I have today, and this is what I'm going to do, and that's the best I can do with my golf right now, to just simply enjoy it.
Wow,
fantastic.
That's a great
Cindy?
Word, acceptance. I think I need to look in the mirror on that one.
Well, truly, don't you find it doesn't matter whether you're you know, a 20 handicap or a 5 or a professional, there has to be a level of this is what I have today, and it will never be the same 2 days in a row. As a matter of fact, it's probably not going to be – actually, it will never be the same 2 shots in a row, because you emotionally, mentally, physically will be in a different place every shot. And so acceptance and – this is what it is, has to be in your, you know, in your inside to just know that and go with it. And I think that, you know, that I think that's something that helped me through my career, that it just, just that, that I can't be what I was yesterday, but I can be what I am today, and just go play with that.
You know, Sandra, all the years that you played, and you're so consistent and such a great player, always at the top, I always admired your ability to stay paced, if you will, your steady pace. It's something we've discussed, an attribute and a characteristic that both you and my husband have, of which I am not been blessed with. I have to try to steady my pace. What is a key for you or your philosophy behind that? Can you help our listeners? Because we're not all alike, and we just need to be made aware of that.
Well, and yes, that's one of the biggest things, is that we are not all alike, and it would be unfair to yourself to try to be what Alan is. I mean, you'll never have that personality, so you need to just find what makes you comfortable and brings out the most consistency in you. And I think for me personally, I think it really came from really very early when I really started playing golf. And Mr. Mitchell that I started with 6 months after I started playing golf, that was his personality. And I think that I kind of keyed into that. He had things like I'm right-handed, so he had me, like if I opened a door right-handed once, I had to open it twice left-handed. And I had to do a lot of things that way. So he had me into a real state of awareness of me, my physical being, not necessarily my golf game at that point when you're doing things like that, but of my golf game. And of me personally, and I just think that that just kind of set the tone for me as to how I was going to be. And you know, and one of the other things, and we hear it all the time, is you know, he really wanted me. Once I finished playing around, I left it. It was like I'm leaving the office. And you know, you hear it at every golf course and every club when they get in, they go sit down and have a beverage. What are they talking about? They're talking about the bad shots that they hit. They're not talking about anything good. And, you know, I'm trying to encourage some of my students and people that I talk to, let's talk about the good things. Let's not dwell on, you know, I hit it in the water or I hit it over. Let's talk about the one good par putt I made that, you know, really helped me through the day. Let's talk about good stuff. There's lots of good stuff. We don't need to talk about the bad. And it sets a tone for you. If I continue to just talk about bad stuff all the time, I'm going to go, woe is me, and I'm not there. That's not me.
Yeah, let me just very quickly interject on that note, Sandra, because, you know, we've talked about, and I think you'll agree that, you know, golf does mimic life in so many ways. And really, this is what you just said is really sort of the difference between being successful, whether it's on the golf course or in life, is what you focus on. Successful people tend to, they all have bad experiences, as we all do, but they don't focus or dwell on the bad mistakes that they've made. They learn from them, but they focus on the positives and then regroup and move forward. And I think what the average golfer tends to do is what you just indicated, is after the round, they'll maybe go and have a drink or something and focus on the negative aspects of that round instead of what the good things they accomplished during that play. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. As I said, you can go to any golf course and listen to the conversation after people play. And you're right. I mean, I think it's something that people have just gotten into kind of across the board. They just take it with their daily life as well. And, you know, you can only dwell on bad stuff just so long, and then it almost becomes fact, if you will. And, you know, I think, as I said, I think that that's the acceptance of what I am today, because I'm not going to show up at the golf course, as I said, I'm not going to show up exactly the same as I was yesterday. Something's going to be different. I slept really well, or I didn't sleep so well. I'm a little tired. I've got a little sinus, whatever. So I'm not going to be the same. And what am I today? And I think that that's just knowing myself. Somebody asked me, you know, why did I feel like that? What was the characteristic that I had that helped me the most? And I said, I just really thought it was knowing me, who I am, how I respond in just about any given situation. I really think that that is the acceptance of who I am and where I am today, right now. I try to be pretty present.
Yeah.
And do you find that with the children that you teach, or the juniors, I have all my kids, they try to compare themselves to other people. And it's like, you can't go there because you're different. You can only be the best you that you can be. And I think that's right along the same lines as what you're saying is, you know, you don't want to accept all your mistakes. You want to be able to work on them, but you also have to realize what you can and can't change about yourself. And I think it's coming to terms with, you know, I am who I am, and how can I improve, and what do I just need to surrender with, you know?
Right. And don't you hear right now, especially from the young people, oh, I want to hit it further. I want to hit the driver further. I want to hit it further. I want to hit it further. Well, you're only going to hit it just so far. And, you know, people across the board, not just juniors, but everybody's watching, you know, golf on TV, and they're seeing how far they hit it. They're going, well, I want to hit it further. I want to try and buy a driver that's going to hit it further. You're only going to hit it as far as you can hit it. And the equipment and how the professionals are working on their physiques and their strength factor is helping them. But you cannot watch, you know, someone and say, oh, well, I want to do that. One of my things that I will tell students is that, you know, they'll see something on TV and they'll go, I'm going to try that. Well, whoever was doing that are suggesting that you do that, you don't have them there to tell you, yes, that will work for you, or no, it won't, or this will fit you, no, it won't. You don't have that person's perspective. And so for the average golfer, I think that gets in their way a lot of reading something in a golf magazine that says you need to grip it this way and you'll gain 10 yards. Well, no, you're probably not. But you know, they're going to try it, and then they're going to get frustrated, and then hopefully
They have no idea if it's appropriate for them.
Correct. Absolutely. But they're going to try it because Jack Nicklaus said it, you know, whoever said it. And if he can do it, I can do it. Well, no, probably not.
Exactly. You know, the interesting thing, Sandra, you raise a very valid point, and I've said this many times, you know, on the air, particularly about equipment. And I'm certainly not knocking the equipment. I think there's a lot of great stuff out there, but it really depends on the individual. And, you know, a lot of people think that, well, if I go out and buy that $400 driver, it's going to, you know, improve my slice, and it's going to – and to a certain degree, it can help depending on your abilities, but it really depends on you. You know, if you look back in time, as Cindy was mentioning earlier in the program, you know, talking about the career of somebody like Kathy Whitworth, who's won 88 tournaments, you know, more than any male or female on the planet, they didn't have the technology the same as they do today when she was in her prime. So, you know, that sort of contradicts what you're hearing, you know, them say on television now, that this equipment's going to do that, because nobody's matched what she has done in today's circuit.
Correct. You know, and they don't, you know, they go by that driver that has, you know, 15 different settings, and they have no clue what those settings will do for them. And they didn't, you know, probably get it fit for themselves, and that's another problem. But, you know, I did a little panel discussion at the Women's U.S. Open, and I was asked if my era was given today's equipment, would we be able to do what we did? And I said, I think we could. I think we would be just fine. You know, and it's really hard to compare eras because of, you know, not that we don't have great players. I think we've had great players at every stage, every level that we've had. It's just different. But I think that we really probably had some of the best. As you said, no one has ever equaled Kathy's 88. They can't even equal Mickey Wright's 82. So, you know, there were a lot of wins out there. And it was a very special time. And I think that if we, you know, turn the clock back, I think we would have been fine.
Right, so, right.
I had seen somewhere in a magazine that they had Rory go on the track then with a driver from, you know, the 70s, and that he only hit it like 275. And that was the max he could hit the driver. So all things equal, you know, it's not that Rory would take that equipment and hit it 300 yards.
Right.
So I believe what you're saying is absolutely true. The players are the players and the shot makers, and they would be doing just as well now as they did then, if not better.
Yep, I agree. And it was we had a little fundraiser here for a women's golf team that I work with at a small college here in Fort Worth, and on one of the holes, I took one of my persimmon drivers, and that's what they had to drive with off of the tee. And everybody that hit it went, "Wow, that really felt good." And you know, I said, "Yes, it does." And they really kind of, they said, "Well, but the head's so small." I went, "Okay, so, you know, you better find the center." But they went, "Wow, I hit it good." You know, again, we come back to you're only going to be as good as you are, whatever that is, whatever your strength is. If it's, you know, if it's more the you don't hit it as far, well, then you better, you know, have a really good short game. And I think that's what we see, and it's just a huge equalizer to find out what you're good at and go work on it. And not to say that you ignore what you're not good at, because you have to pay attention to every facet of your game. But Cindy knows me well enough to know that I really do push the mental side. There's going to be no action before thought, so the mind is always going. So to have a very organized mind is going to be incredibly important.
Exactly. Exactly. Cindy?
I'm thinking before I talk. I was like, wow, that was great. There's no action before thought.
Right.
I'm going to do that, Sandra. Can I steal it from you? I'll even give you credit. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Go ahead. Repeat.
I said, I love the fact that you just said there's no action before thought. I'm going to use that to give you credit.
Oh.
Because, yeah, that is like a profound statement, and Ted, that would be why I like hanging out with these wisdom-filled women. So, yeah, pay attention to your intention.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I try to jokingly say, are you going to jump in a car and, you know, throw it in drive and go somewhere? I mean, no, you're going to have a plan. You're going to have a plan. You have to have the awareness of actually opening the door, of putting the key in ignition or pushing the button to start the car. All that has some thought before it, and so that's life.
Yeah, that is so true, and you know, I think so many people, as you had indicated, Sandra, focus on you know, the physical part of the game and how far I can hit it, and that's going to, you know, help things out. And certainly distance does have advantages, but you have to really be able to, it's as you said, you have to accept what game you're bringing to the course that day. And, you know, it's not going to be the same as yesterday. It could be better, it could be worse, or might be somewhere, you know, in that region, somewhere between. But it's never going to be the same two rounds back-to-back. And I think people just have to understand that And as you said, and I'm writing that word down, acceptance, I think you just have to accept what you have that particular day and work with it the best you can.
Well, how many times do you see even the professionals, you know, one round, you know, they have that 63, 64. What do they follow it up with? Maybe 69, maybe 70, but not another 63 or 64. Those are tough. It's wonderful to do it once, but you go to the golf course the next day, it's not the same. And wishing it to be different doesn't help either. I want to be like I was yesterday. That's not going to work either.
Absolutely.
Right.
And, you've got to
deal with what you've got.
Yep. Cindy?
I said, yes, you absolutely have to deal with what you've got that day and be grateful. And one of the things that I was made aware of as well is that Kathy Whitworth won 88 times, but she also came in second 96 times. So one of the things that we need to be made aware of is in golf, and somebody said this lately, and you're going to lose a lot more than you're going to win. And so, again, accept that. You cannot win all the time, and every day is different.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah, somebody asked me how many times I finished second. I said, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know, but... I think that, you know, in order to win those 88 times, she had to be very, very close a whole bunch more. So that just that 96 kind of proves that you need to be up and around there all the time in order to step in and win the tournament. Because, you know, I will say to win anything, there's two things that have to happen. Something good for you and something bad for someone else. Those two things always have to be in play. Either you made a couple of birdies coming in or somebody made a bogey or a three-putt or whatever. So those two things always have to have in play, but you always have to be knocking on the door in order to be able to get there when the opportunity arises.
And, you know, that's funny that you say that. I didn't see the final round of the LPGA Women's Championship, but I had some friends that texted me, oh, Brittany missed two, you know, putts on 18 to lose, and I happened to be friends with her on Facebook, and I was so proud of her attitude on Facebook that she was just grateful to be in the hunt again because she's had a little bit of a struggle. And again, same thing with Camilo. You have to lose, and there's lessons to learn. We can witness it with every tour player, some more than others, like Rory. You know, what happened that he shot 80 at the Masters the last round and then won the U.S. Open a month or two later. Like you're saying, Sandra, you have to be in a position enough to learn the lessons to be able to stay in the present moment. There's nothing more than that. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You really do. I mean, you know, we all during our careers have had, you know, setbacks with an injury or, you know, our game just wasn't where we wanted it. But you can fight through those things and come out and hopefully say lesson learned. But every time you either win and or don't win, but you come in close, like Brittany right now, hopefully she came away with something positive, maybe that her health is better and she's in a better frame of mind and she will feel good. She feels good about her game. I saw a little bit of it. I didn't see the end, but I saw a little bit of it. She looked like she was, you know, hitting the ball really well and just really had things you know, in hand, and, you know, something took a little bit of a turn, but hopefully she feels good about her game, and there's definitely something about when your game feels good, go with it, ride it hard, because it will change at some point. You may ride it for a week, you may ride it for a month, but at some point, it's going to be some physical, it's going to be a lot mental. Is going to change, and the mind is at some point perhaps going to say, okay, after a month of really playing, well, I'm a little tired. I need to take a little time off. The brain just kind of shuts down on you a little bit, and physically as well, because, you know, playing at a high level, it takes a lot out of you physically and mentally as well, to just constantly be there, but it sure is fun.
Well, it requires a lot of stamina, I think, in both areas. I mean, it, you know, a lot of people don't think that golf is, you know, really a physical game, but it is in a lot of ways. I mean, to be, you know, playing for, you know, 4 hours, you know, in a round, and that's, you know, certainly at the professional level, but at the, you know, amateur level, I mean, some of the people today, unfortunately, they're out there for 5 or 6 hours, and that's a long time. You know, to be going around meandering through the course. Sandra, let me ask you something. Just I was sort of collecting some thoughts here, and I've heard a few top players be asked this question. I know Bubba Watson this year was asked at the Masters, and I think Rory's been asked this as well. When you found yourself throughout your career that you were sort of in what people refer to as the zone, where everything was just sort of going right, a lot of professionals have answered this in a way that they can't explain really how they were feeling. Just everything just sort of gelled. On the opposite of the spectrum, of course, when things weren't going right, everybody seems to collect their thoughts and remember everything that bad that happened. But why is it, and do you ever feel that you were like that when you were playing at your best and just everything was just sort of clicking and gelling at the same time that you really don't remember? It just happened. You were in that zone, so to speak. Do you ever find that through your career?
I have, you know, it's rare, I think, to really get in it, and there's no magic to it. It's just a point of where everything that you see you can do, and what makes that happen is, you know, I think is a huge combination of the mental and the physical. But yeah, it's not that you don't remember what was going on, because you do. But everything, you see every shot so clearly, and you could take two different clubs and make it happen. It's just, you know, it's just an incredible experience. And no, you really can't describe it. You can't say, well, I felt this or I was aware of this, because you're very focused on every point in time. And the mind really doesn't wander away. Because we do that a lot, I think, just as human beings, we'll get out of the garage and all of a sudden think of something else. Well, and when you're kind of in that zone, you don't think of anything else. It's not that you're thinking about the next shot. It's just that your mind doesn't go anywhere. It just kind of hangs around right there. And as I said, just every shot you see, you know you can hit it. And if you know you can hit it, I promise you can.
Yeah, it's and I know a lot of the pros, as I said, that you know, have been asked that over time, and they've all pretty much sort of summed it up the same way as you have. It's just everything's sort of, you know, the wheels are all turning in the same direction, and they're just really able to see, you know, themselves executing those shots without really, you know, any effort, and it doesn't seem to be weighing down heavily on them. Cindy, I think we have just a few moments here if you want to ask, if you've got another question for Sandra before we have to close off for today.
What do you find different with the tour now than when you guys were out there?
What is different about the tour today?
Yes.
Well, I think the biggest thing is the huge influx of the international players, and the more travel for official events. I think that I absolutely marvel at all the women and the men that travel the way they do. I think that it's just I'm not sure that I would have loved that as much as they seem to embrace it. But I think it's cultures coming together through golf that is the largest influence, and certainly the women's tour is seeing it with the influx of the Asian players who are so very talented, and you know, it's bringing all these cultures together and some incredible talent from all over the world, and you know, I think we were kind of a little bit the world tour before the world tour really started, and now it's with us, both the men's and the women's tour, and so that's the biggest difference. When I was playing, we didn't necessarily have that, and we traveled out of the country, but not certainly like they do today. So if I had one thing, and certainly the way the players work out, it's amazing. It's just amazing. They're amazing athletes.
I would tend to agree with you. It's just they're really committed to be the best they can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and it's part of the evolution of the game. I mean, there's always changes. We touched on briefly a little bit ago that, you know, obviously there's differences in the equipment from today. And I have to agree with you, Sandra. I unfortunately, I don't have the ones that I used to have, but I always liked the old persimmon woods. They always had a nice feel to them. They had a very classy look, of course. So I can understand how your students were a little bit excited when they were able to hit the ball and enjoy that feeling. But a lot of things have changed in the game, some good, some bad. But I think as long as the game continues to move forward and evolve, and I'm very glad to see that women's golf particularly is growing, and I hope it continues to grow leaps and bounds. I enjoy watching the ladies on the LPGA and also seeing a lot of the great players, the legends of the game like yourself and Kathy and of course my co-host here, Cindy Miller, out there playing the sport that they love so much. And we want to thank you, Sandra, for joining us today on the Women of Golf show, and we certainly appreciate you sharing your thoughts and inputs into the program.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun, and I enjoyed it, and I will look forward to another visit.
Thank you.
Well,
so
you
much
have
Sandra.
An open... Yeah, you have an open invitation. You're welcome to come back anytime, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Great. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, that was Sandra Haney, Director of Instruction and at the Windstar Golf Academy in Oklahoma, and, of course, a Hall of Famer on the LPGA, and just a great lady, a great asset to the game, and we're grateful that she's out there still playing and enjoying and helping others learn this great game. And we're going to take this opportunity, Cindy and I, to thank you for listening to the program and tuning in to the Women of Golf broadcast each and every week. We're going to take a short break next week, so we won't be here, but we bet on the first Tuesday, which I think is the 2nd of September, with another great guest. Cindy, you're off. Where are you off to next week?
The LPGA National Teaching and Club Pro Championship at Chateau Alain Resort in Brazelton, Georgia, just north of Atlanta.
Well, good luck in that tournament, and keep playing well, and keep helping those students out there enjoy this great game that we both love. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you not next week, but the week after, September 2nd, here on the Women of Golf every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We thank you for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks, Cindy.